They have published some of the most well-known authors in the Southern movement, from the Kennedy brothers to Jimmy Cantrell. Pelican Publishing Company has an incredibly diverse library of over 1,300 titles to their credit, with about 60 new titles published annually. If you like books about history, literature, humor, Cajun cooking, travel, or just about anything else, Pelican's website, ePelican.com, is the place for you. With online catalogs and secure online shopping, it's never been easier to tap into the wealth of knowledge and reading pleasure that Pelican has to offer. At ePelican.com, you can browse all of the Pelican's titles and shop for just the right book for yourself or a gift for someone else. Treat yourself today. Visit ePelican.com. That website again, ePelican.com.
All right, folks, you're listening to a live broadcast again tonight, and we are here with another Pelican Pages segment here at Dixie Broadcasting. As many of you know, Pelican Publishing Company is one of our major sponsors of Dixie Broadcasting Radio, and they are part of the reason that you're able to listen to Dixie Broadcasting 24 hours a day all throughout the year, and we appreciate them quite a bit here at Dixie Broadcasting, and hope that you do too. One of the things that we do in conjunction with Pelican Publishing is we have a Pelican Pages segment, usually a couple of times each month on Wednesday nights about this time, in which we interview different authors from Pelican Publishing Company, usually books that are brand new, but not always. And tonight is no different. We have another Pelican author with us tonight, and something that we've never talked about before on Dixie Broadcasting, because quite frankly, I don't know of any other author who's ever broached this particular subject, but it's certainly going to be an interesting one and one that you'll enjoy, especially if you love Southern history anyway, and if you love Robert E. Lee, our great Southern hero. Tonight we're very pleased to have with us as a guest Mr. Thomas Forehand. And Tom is the author of a book, Robert E. Lee's Lighter Side, The Marble Man's Sense of Humor. And, Tom, welcome to the broadcast.
Well, good to be with you folks. And you, Ray.
Well, I want to start out by letting our folks know, as you're listening to the interview tonight, you're always able to visit Pelican's website at ePelican.com. And you can actually look at a review of this book and some information about it while we're discussing the book online. All you need to do is go to the tab at the top of the ePelican.com website and click on the Browse tab there. And when it comes up, you can type in Thomas Forehand, F-O-R-E-H-A-N-D is the author's name, or you can type in Robert E. Lee's Lighter Side, and it'll pull that book right up for you. By the way, if you purchase that book online from Pelican, you can actually purchase it at a reduced price, at least while you're listening to the broadcast tonight on this interview. So, Tom, we appreciate you being on the program with us tonight. I know this is your first time being with us, so let's start out, if you don't mind. Let me give our folks just a little bit of a bird's-eye view of who you are, and then I'm going to ask you to fill us in on some of the details about exactly who Tom Forehand is.
Yeah, okay.
Tom has spent most of his life in the field of public service and also as a Christian educator and as a pastor. He earned his bachelor's degree in radio and television journalism and later attended Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. He is from Tennessee, and after some travels abroad doing some other things in life, he now lives with his wife and two of his children in Clarksville, Tennessee. And I know that, Tom, one of the things you and I discussed off the air and that I read about you in preparing for tonight is that you actually do a living history presentation as Robert E. Lee at a number of occasions. So why don't you just fill us in on some of the details and tell us how you became interested in things about the war between the states?
Well, I think for most of your listeners, the most interesting thing might be that my father was a Yankee.
I don't know if that's the best way to start it, but
he called himself a Yankee with that D word in front of it. That's what he called himself, and he came down here just before World War II in 1941, and he met my mother, who was a Confederate, down in Chattanooga, and they wound up getting married. I was part of the result, and so I'm sure she won him over.
It sounds like she must have.
But I grew up here in Tennessee, most of my life. I've got roots here in Tennessee for several families right here in Middle Tennessee that go back over 200 years.
Wow.
And had both my grandfathers fought for the Confederacy, one in the cavalry and one in artillery. And I guess another thing that might be important is I'm a UT volunteer.
Is that right?
And I'm sorry for all you Georgia fans down there.
We'll try to excuse that.
It was about time for us to win, wasn't it? I would have been many places and done many things, lived several places here in the United States. We came back to Tennessee in the early 90s to settle down, my wife and I. My wife was from near Clarksville, and that's where we live now, near Clarksville. And as far as the book was concerned, I would say in the early 90s, we lived over in Franklin, Tennessee, right outside of Franklin. And that's when I saw the Ken Burns series on the War Between the States, which certainly was a monumental effort. Everyone doesn't like everything Burns did, but it certainly does lay a lot of things out for you, so you can get a look at what took place in a very a wide span, very short period of time.
Right.
And by watching it over and over again, I really learned more about the war than I knew growing up here in Middle Tennessee.
Wow.
When I was growing up, no one ever talked about it. I went to high school in Nashville at Montgomery Bell Academy, and there in the lobby we had a picture of Sam Davis. But once again, no one ever talked about it. But anyway, after reading that, that kind of piqued my interest, and a few years later, I got a book about Robert E. Lee. Have you ever heard of Stanley F. Horn?
I don't believe so.
He was kind of the Shelby Foote of his day in Nashville, Tennessee, back in the 40s.
Yes, sir.
And anyway, he wrote a book, The Robert E. Lee Reader. And so I read that, and I had known one of his relatives. As a matter of fact, he used to put golf balls in his study, but I never did get to meet Mr. Stone.
Wow.
I mean, Mr. Horn, excuse me. And so after reading that book, I just was really drawn to Robert E. Lee, and that's how I started studying Robert E. Lee. It was about 8 years ago, reading books about him.
Now, obviously, Tom, there have been a number of works that have been published over the years about General Lee, but to my knowledge, there's not any other book out there besides your own that deals with the lighter side of General Lee and gives us a little bit deeper look into the aspect of his life that makes him a little more real to us.
Well, surely, and I'll tell you how I came about this subject. I try to do these first-person Robert E. Lee portrayals. I don't call them living history. That's where you just walk around and pretend to be Lee, and I can't do that. But I do try to get scripts and portray him in small acts, let's put it that way.
Sure.
And so I had written one portrayal for Lee, called Lee Before the War, and then I was working on a second one, and my garb, I dress up like Lee would have dressed up in many of his pictures after the war and tried to present him as the older man telling the story of his life. But in the midst of trying to prepare a second script, I ran into a problem. And the problem was, as I'm up in front of people trying to be Robert E. Lee, I'm supposed to be serious and proper and supposed to stand very straight, as he did. But I kept running across so much of this humor in his writing. And so the long and the short of it was, I just said, I have to try to incorporate some of this humor because there was so much of it.
Right.
It was such a part of his personality. He was not a comedian.
Right.
But he was very humorous, and I would say in many situations, under many circumstances. And so I started, compiling these, and then I said, well, now where's the book on his humor? And I didn't find any book that was that had the title of Robert E. Lee's Humor. There may be one out there. I just didn't find it. And so finally I put one together and had over 100 illustrations from other books and sources and sent it down to Pelican. And Pelican decided to publish it.
Well, that's great.
That's how it came about, just really by accident.
That's amazing. I know that now I have thoroughly digested your book. I'll have to tell you it was a couple of months ago, though. But you have over 100 examples in the book of his wit and his humor. And, after reading that book, it just I don't know that anything to a Southern boy could ever totally do away with the almost mythical figure of Robert E. Lee, but this certainly did bring him down to the earth and make him a real man, a real person, more than I think I had ever viewed him myself in the past before this book.
Well, maybe you see why I put it together, because there was so much of this. And this is all in print before me. I would take from other and older books and paraphrase and quote, and especially his letters. His letters are just filled with humorous statements and anecdotes.
And you know, the only pictures we're used to seeing of Robert E. Lee are where he doesn't have a smile on his face, and most of them are during the war itself, when there were a lot of things pressing down upon him. When we see him portrayed in movies, most of the time he's standing there with Longstreet or Jackson, and he's very pensive about a particular battle. And so
right.
We don't really get to even think about that side of Robert E. Lee. So this certainly has made him more of a real man to me, and I know other folks that read the book will get the same thing. Now, how did you come about finding the material to include in this book?
Oh, just reading books about Robert E. Lee.
And
just the standard books. Of course, Freeman, Dowdy, the book by Robert E. Lee's son, the two books by Jones. If you look through those materials alone, you'll find quite a bit of the material that I have in this book. But then just looking through, just following sources and leads everywhere I could, and just jotting them down. There are quite a few. And of course, if you go through the book, you know, you'll be able to trace the source, because I'll have it down there for you.
And of course, you're not saying that Robert E. Lee was a comedian by any stretch of the imagination, I don't suppose.
No, he wasn't a comedian by any means. There was a president back at that time that liked to stand up in front of crowds, and just by the way he moved his head and shoulders, get people to laugh. And he wore a stovetop hat. Lee was not like that. No, but he was very humorous. Very humorous.
Well, I think what I'd like to do is, when we come back from our break that we're going to take here in just a moment, would you be willing, Tom, to either maybe give us just a few of these excerpts from your book, or maybe give us part of one of those presentations that you do when you portray Lee?
Well, we'll try to come up with something.
Okay. Well, folks, we're going to take a short break here. And when we come back, we're going to talk with Tom some more about his book with Pelican Publishing entitled Robert E. Lee's Lighter Side, The Marble Man's Sense of Humor. And again, you can find out more about this book and actually purchase it online at a reduced price right now by going to epelican.com and search for the title of this book, or put in Thomas Forehand's name, and it'll pull it up right there on the website for you as well. Right now, we're going to play a song by Bobby Horton. It's a favorite of many of our folks out there. It's entitled Southern Birthright, and I think it's a song that all Southerners can relate to. So here's one from one of the leading Southern artists, Bobby Horton, entitled Southern Birthright. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with Tom in just a minute.
There's a birthright that each Southern boy inherits when he's born, and he carries it forever till the day his mourners mourn. It's not founded on old politics of race or slavery. Those who see no more than that care not for history. For our hearts are still with Jackson, and our faith in General Lee, and we still can taste the sweetness of that one last victory. Though we'll never ride with Forrest, and we'll never march with Bragg, we still love our Southern heroes, and we love our Southern flag. It It's a way of life that ended, and the way it died so hard. It's the honor and the chivalry folks today most disregard. It's the ride around McClellan and Newmarket's young cadets. It's Sam Watkins telling stories and Sam Davis's regrets. And our hearts are still with Stewart and our faith in General Lee. And we still can taste the sweetness of that one last victory. No, we'll never march with Johnston or be caught with General Bragg. We will love our Southern heroes and we love our Southern flag. It's the dream of picket charging and never being stopped. It's the thought of Stonewall Jackson never being shot. Though we never change America, she is as she should be. We can't help but try once more to win that one last victory. For our hearts are still with Jackson and our faith in General Lee. We still can taste the sweetness of that one last victory. No, we'll never march with Claiborne or be stuck with General Bragg. We will love our Southern heroes and we love our Southern flag. For our hearts are still with Longstreet and our faith in General Lee. We still think we're good enough to win that one last victory. Time won't let us march with Early or be wasted by old Bragg. But we'll flaunt our Southern birthright and we'll wave our Southern flag.
They have published some of the most well-known authors in the Southern movement, from the Kennedy brothers to Jimmy Cantrell. Pelican Publishing Company has an incredibly diverse library of over 1,300 titles to their credit, with about 60 new titles published annually. If you like books about history, literature, humor, Cajun cooking, travel, or just about anything else, Pelican's website, ePelican.com, is the place for you. With online catalogs and secure online shopping, it's never been easier to tap into the wealth of knowledge and reading pleasure that Pelican has to offer. At ePelican.com, you can browse all of the Pelican's titles and shop for just the right book for yourself or a gift for someone else. Treat yourself today. Visit ePelican.com. That website again, ePelican.com.
All right, welcome back to this Pelican Pages interview, and we're joined in the studio via the telephone line tonight with Tom Forehand, who is the author of a book from Pelican Publishing entitled Robert E. Lee's Lighter Side, The Marble Man's Sense of Humor. And Tom, welcome back to the show.
Good to be back, Brian.
Well, Tom, we were when we took our break, we told the folks we were going to give them just a little bit of a taste of the book. And so, if you don't mind, just give us a few examples of things that you mention in the book.
Sure, I will, and I'll try to do part of it in an oral presentation, which is a little different from the book, but it's the same illustration.
Great.
And too, Ray, I tell people when I give my presentations on Lee's humor that you may not think that everything in here is as funny as I did, because just as beauty is in the eye of the beholder, humor or irony is in the ear of the listener.
That's right.
But I guarantee, I tell people, I guarantee them, if they'll read all over 100 plus illustrations in this book of Lee's humor, they'll come away with no other conclusion than he did definitely have a lively sense of humor. But with that said, let me bring up one of the illustrations in the book about marriage. Lee was always poking fun of marriage and courtship. Matter of fact, when he got married, he complained after the ceremony because he said the minister had read the marriage ceremony as though he was reading his death warrant. And you know how we might talk about someone committing a crime? Once Lee talked about how someone was getting ready to commit marriage. But that's typical Robert E. Lee when you read through his letters. But he's off fighting in the Mexican-American War in about 1848. He's corresponding with his folks back home in Alexander, Virginia. And he writes a short note back trying to discourage a young lady from marrying a preacher. And so it goes something like this. It seems that all in Alexandria, Virginia are progressing as usual, and that nothing will stop their marrying and giving in marriage. Tell Miss Blank she better dismiss that young preacher and marry a soldier. Well, there's some chance of the soldier being shot. But it will take a particular dispensation from God for her to rid herself of that preacher. Now, that is typical Robert E. Lee, and that's pretty close to a quote from one of his letters.
That's great.
A short one. Robert E. Lee, of course, by the 1850s, was what I would say would be a devout Christian.
Yes, sir.
He was a lifelong Episcopalian. And after the war, they asked him what he thought about the tradition of fasting. And as most of your listeners know, fasting is giving up something to honor God. Usually it's food. But Lee was a very practical Christian, and maybe, Ray, he was thinking about the days of Mardi Gras. I don't know. But this was his answer to that question of what he thought about personal fasting. His answer was this. The best way for most of us is to fast from our sins and eat what is good for us. Very practical answer, isn't it?
It right? is.
Another from the book, you could call it Fallen from Grace. During the last part of the war between the states, as most of your listeners know, Lee's troops had very little to eat. His son would even say after the war that he was hungry for 3 years. On the other hand, Grant's Union troops had plenty of food, lots of provender. And so I like this illustration because it shows how Lee and Grant are both trying to out-psych one another. They're not only trying to outmaneuver one another on the battlefield, but they're trying to out-psych each other in other ways. And so the illustration goes like this concerning food. And Lee would say, I received a verbal message from General Grant during the flag of truce for burial. He said that he kept such close touch with me that he knew what I ate for breakfast each morning. I sent word back to him that he must either be mistaken or have fallen from grace since the last time I saw him, because he would not permit me to eat for me to eat such a breakfast as mine without dividing his with me. I sent my compliments to General Grant and also the message that I perhaps knew as much about what he ate for his dinners as he knew about what I ate for my breakfasts. So we've got a sample, and I'll give you one more. I don't want to torture your audience. But about Lee's Bible. And of course, during the war, Lee lost a lot of his possessions. They were scattered all over creation. So we got a letter from New York. Someone said, we know where a lady's got your Bible, or one of your Bibles. So Lee wrote back to this gentleman thanking him for letting him know. And he said this. So many articles formerly belonging to me are scattered over the country that I fear I have not time to devote to their recovery. I know no one in Buffalo whom I could ask to reclaim the Bible in question. If the lady who has it will use it, as I hope she will herself seek to restore it to its rightful owner. I will therefore leave the decision of the question up to her and her conscience. That Let me stop good. And give you and your audience a little break on that. Right.
That was great.
But you see, there's a little philosophy in there.
Yes.
There's a lot of practical wisdom. And there's some real subtle humor.
Yeah.
That's like, when you read through Lee's letters, sometimes you have to be very careful. When he was working in his early years with the United States military, he had to go up north, I believe right up into the edge of Canada, to do some surveying work. And so he and his partner, his fellow soldier, broke into a lighthouse because they had to get some equipment up there. And they actually did battle with a snake. But when Lee wrote it, it sounded as though he was actually killing one of the British soldiers who may have been up there. And even Freeman thought that they'd actually killed a man, but it turned out it was a joke.
Oh.
And we mentioned that in the book. Someone did some research on that point.
That's
great. But it's very subtle. It's very subtle sometimes the way he writes.
Now, I know that on the back cover of your book, it talks about the fact that his wife, Mary, was sometimes a little bit concerned, I guess, because of his constant sense of humor, and she actually expressed concern over the depth and sincerity of Lee's faith. Can you give us just a little bit of insight into that?
Well, I think you've summed it up, and basically this is a note we have in the back of the book that comes from John Perry's book called, when it was first published, it was called Lady of Arlington, The Life of Mrs. Robert E. Lee. I believe it's republished now under another name. But the point is, Mary Lee, about the time she was getting ready to court Robert E. Lee, it really had a spiritual awakening. And I believe she would say she was born again. She may have even used those expressions.
Mm-hmm.
And John Perry was able to get into this journal that she kept. I don't believe it had ever been published before, and he put a lot of it out in that book.
Wow.
And so if you're interested, you'll want to get that book and read. He has large portions of it in the book. So she was just concerned that Robert E. Lee was, as you said, maybe the depth of his faith wasn't as deep as she wanted, and certainly not as deep as hers at that time. She was a very diligent, very zealous Christian.
And you know, I can imagine after having gone through everything he had been through, that was probably just a way of dealing with some of the things that he could not forget.
Well, of course, now this was early, though. Early,
okay, yeah. Okay.
But, you know, maybe she was just ahead of him in a spiritual journey.
That's possible.
Far down the road, young man. It's kind of interesting that when Lee was in Texas, when Texas, the folks out there voted for secession, that Lee and another man that had tried to court Lee's wife before Lee and she got married was out there, and he was the governor of Texas, Sam Houston.
Wow.
So isn't that interesting? They both tried to court her, and of course one won her. They were both in Texas when secession took place.
How about that? Now that's a story that I don't think too many folks know. Now, give us a little bit of a rundown of the list of subjects of Lee's humor that you mentioned in the book.
Well, I tell you what, I'll just read a few. But if you pick up the book, you know, at the bookstore, just turn to the preface and just skim down the preface page, and you'll see in one paragraph that I list about 36 different subjects of Lee's humor. Let me read some of those real quickly: religious traditions, newspaper editors, biographies, spiritualism. You know, someone who could speak to the dead.
Right.
Newborn babies, liquor, weddings, marriages, courtship, military rank, dating, pets, military food, his own appearance, his own fame, doctors and medicines, politicians, studying, and on and on.
Now, how many illustrations of Lee's humor and his wit have you included in this book, Tom?
Well, now, we had over 120, I believe there were 124, 125 in the main part of the book. As a matter of fact, they're broken down, you know, into large paragraph segments. If you just flip through the front part of the book, I mean, you can just see, you know, that there are many illustrations there. In the back part of the book, I think there are about 30 to 40 pages of notes. There are some other humorous little details, and especially a lot of the nicknames that Lee gave to family members. I thought it was interesting he nicknamed his brother Sidney Smith Lee, who was in the Navy with Admiral Perry. He nicknamed him Rose. Now think for a minute. Lee's in the Army, you know, the one that goes into the cavalry, and he nicknames his brother, who's a sailor, you know, rough, tough sailor, Rose. How would you like to have the nickname Rose as a sailor? But once again, this is Lee.
Yeah.
This is Robert E. Lee.
I'm sure his brother got a real kick out of that.
Oh, yeah.
Now, Tom, this book is published by Pelican. How did you come to be acquainted with Pelican, and do you have any other books that are forthcoming maybe down the road for us?
Well, I did what people that want to get a book published are told to do. I try to write something you know something about, and I've been reading about this for a long time. Then find publishing companies that would tend to print the type of book, publish the type of book that you're writing. If it's on gardening, you want to find someone that does books on gardening.
Right.
And so I got the addresses for many of the books that would publish kind of Southern literature, Southern history. Pelican was among one of them, and I sent them out to the various companies and all at once, and Pelican, you know, wanted to publish it. So I was very grateful.
Well, and Pelican really is probably the only major publishing house we still have left down here in the South that really is interested in publishing things for us that are not all politically correct. And I would dare say there aren't too many publishing houses that are even interested in anything about Robert E. Lee.
Right. And and you asked me about anything in the future. In doing this study, well, I came up with an idea for another book, and that was, I would just say it was on Robert E. Lee's tenderness.
Hmm.
And once again, I found this kind of interesting. You know, here is the brave, well-known warrior, and he was. But yet, he was a very tender man. He had a very soft heart. So the second book that Pelican is going to publish should be out at any time, and it's called Robert E. Lee's Softer Side. And in that book, which is divided into chapters, I have chapters. I've got a list here. Lee and animals, Lee and chivalry, Lee and his enemies, Lee and his family, Lee and fellow soldiers, Lee and nursing. Robert E. Lee nursed a lot of people when he was at home, family members and others. Matter of fact, when he got out of West Point and he went south down to Georgia for his first duty station,
yes, sir.
His mother had just died, and he took an older family servant with him. The man was sick, and you know, they thought, you know, when going south would help you, so he took him down there, and the man was sick. He probably had some type of tuberculosis. He died. Lee took care of him, got him the best medical help, and helped to bury him down there. And so I have a chapter on Lee and slaves. It's not doesn't have a lot of information, but it has some. But it's Lee and tenderness, and one chapter is Lee and tears. Now, every place that I could find that Robert E. Lee cried, I put it in that chapter. I found over 24 different places.
Wow.
Where it's listed he cried. And this was at a time when Lee graduated from West Point that Andrew Jackson, right up here in Nashville, going to his wife's funeral, he broke down and cried. And according to one source, he apologized because it wasn't manly. So I think that's different. I've never seen any compilation of material like that about Lee's crying. But once again, this gives people a better understanding of the full man.
Sure.
And not just the warrior. And, of course, he was.
Well, Tom, maybe once that book is out and on the bookshelves, maybe we have you back on the broadcast and talk a little bit more about that particular book.
Well, we'll certainly try.
And, folks, if you... keep your eyes and your ears open, especially if you're there in the Middle Tennessee area, and who knows, you might find that Tom Forehand is going to be doing a portrayal of Robert E. Lee in your neck of the woods sometime soon. So if you ever get an opportunity to do that, Tom, it certainly sounds like it would be a memorable thing to see you portray Lee, especially after having done all the research that you've done for him.
Well, on this subject, I guarantee you it'll be a little different. It'll be a little different.
Well, great.
And we'll hope it fairly represents Robert E. Lee too. And I think that's the main thing for us to understand more about him. We'll be gone in a few years. Nobody will be remembering us, but they'll still remember Robert E. Lee.
Well, that's true. And Tom, we'll all be the better off for the added depth of the life of Robert E. Lee that you've added for us. So we certainly appreciate you taking the time to do the research and compile all of it to make it easier for us that don't have the time necessarily to do all the research. So thank you again very much.
Well, thank you, Ryan. Good to be with all of you.
Folks, you've been listening to another Pelican Pages interview here at Dixie Broadcasting, and you can find out more about this particular book, Robert E. Lee's Lighter Side, by Thomas Forehand, and actually purchase it online at a reduced sale price by going to the Pelican website at epelican.com. And do a search, browse for a search of this particular book, And we hope that you will, that you'll take a look at it and a look at many of the other books that Pelican offers, because they certainly offer books on topics of interest to Southerners across a wide variety of subjects, with everything from cookbooks to different types of Southern agriculture and trees and travel, and of course Southern history and Southern heritage too. So you've been listening to another Pelican Pages interview here at Dixie Broadcasting, and we hope that you'll let Pelican Publishing Company know that you appreciate their support of Dixie Broadcasting and Southern Heritage Radio 24 hours a day, 365 days of the year. Thank you very much, and we'll let you go now, and there's plenty more music coming up all throughout the night here at Dixie Broadcasting, so stay tuned and enjoy what's coming up. A famous writer once said, "Talent alone cannot make a writer. There must be a man behind the book, by birth and quality." As the only major Southern publishing house, Pelican Publishing believes that there is something valuable about our Southern way of life, about who we are, and about this place we call home, something worth putting down in written word on the printed page for future generations. Pelican Publishing is proud of our contribution to helping preserve the history and heritage and culture of the South, and we welcome submissions from authors new and experienced here at Pelican. Our family of authors includes some of the best-known names in Southern heritage today, plus a whole lot more. So whether it's about history or heritage, travel or trees, cooking or culture in general, if it's about the South, Pelican should be your first choice. Visit our website at epelican.com to find out about submitting your own book for consideration. Pelican Publishing, giving Southern authors a better choice.
2001, the stock market begins a drop which results in the loss of hundreds of thousands of dollars in individuals' retirement accounts. 2003, gas and oil prices rise dramatically, continuing into the current year. 2004, domestic reports of expected U.S. involvement in Syria and Iran, along with talks of reinstituting the draft, make investments in stocks and bonds highly speculative.
The international bankers and financial wizards who own the Federal Reserve and manipulate the economy have set us on a certain course toward an eventual economic catastrophe that may very well make the Great Depression look not so great after all in comparison. When this happens, there is one commodity that will continue to hold its value, just like it has during every economic collapse and domestic disaster in the history of the world: precious metals. When all else is floundering economically, gold and silver will not only hold their value, they will become more valuable. To find out more about investing in gold or silver, coins or bullion, and to get the most competitive prices around, contact the Money Changer by going to our links or sponsors pages here at Dixie Broadcasting and clicking on the link to their website. There you will find all of the contact information and much more about investing in gold and silver. That's the Money Changer, one of the sponsors on your station, Dixie Broadcasting.
I've lost so much of me, but there's enough of me to say that my home's in Alabama. No matter where I lay my head, my home's in Alabama. Southern going, I don't really know. Can't be the money, Lord knows I'm always broke. Could it be the satisfaction of being understood, when the people really love you and let you know when it's good? Oh, I'll speak my Southern English as natural as I please. I'm in the heart of Dixie, Dixie's in the heart of me. And someday when I make it, when love finds a way, somewhere high on Lookout Mountain, I'll just smile with pride and say, but my home's in Alabama. Church into hospital, blood on the legs.
famous writer once said, "Talent alone cannot make a writer. There must be a man behind the book, by birth and quality." As the only major Southern publishing house, Pelican Publishing believes that there is something valuable about our Southern way of life, about who we are, and about this place we call home, something worth putting down in written word on the printed page for future generations. Pelican Publishing is proud of our contribution to helping preserve the history and heritage and culture of the South, and we welcome submissions from authors new and experienced here at Pelican. Our family of authors includes some of the best-known names in Southern heritage today, plus a whole lot more. So whether it's about history or heritage, travel or trees, cooking or culture in general, if it's about the South, Pelican should be your first choice. Visit our website at epelican.com to find out about submitting your own book for consideration. Pelican Publishing, giving Southern authors a better choice.
This is Dewey Barber at the corporate headquarters of Dixie Outfitters in Odom, Georgia. I'd like to take this opportunity to ask for the support of the Dixie Broadcasting listeners. Dixie Outfitters is widely known for its apparel featuring the Confederate battle flag, but there are many other companies who copy our style in an effort to sell their products as well. Dixie Outfitters is a Southern company. We employ Southern people. We are working every day to preserve our Southern way of life. We do this not only by producing products that illustrate our heritage and culture, but we also support various other organizations that share our mission of preserving our Southern heritage. Dixie Broadcasting is one of these organizations, and there are others like the Sons of Confederate Veterans, the League of the South, the Southern Heritage Political Action Committee, the Georgia Heritage Coalition, the Southern Legal Resource Center, and the Southern Party. Most of our competitors do not live and work in the South and do not contribute to the effort to preserve our traditions. We would like the listeners of Dixie Broadcasting to be aware of the differences between Dixie Outfitters and those other companies who imitate us. We would like to ask them to be vigilant when they shop for Southern Heritage apparel. We'd like for them to ask for Dixie Outfitters by name. If it doesn't say Dixie Outfitters, it ain't Dixie Outfitters. Please accept no substitutes.